Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Shout out to our show sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. Follow them on Instagram at MintInc_USA and look out for the next issue of Mint Mag.
So you want to start a podcast, huh? Well, we got something to help you. The Black Real Estate Dialogue brings you the How to Start a Successful Podcast on a Budget with No Experience ebook and webinar bundle.
We are controlling transmission.
Come and put info into action as we show you the step-by-step process to sharing your successful podcast on a budget. This bundle is full of the exact details, social media hacks, and podcasting process we've used to gain 13,000 downloads and over 10,000 Instagram followers. But that's not all. As a bonus, you'll receive the exact super trackers we use to stay organized and free access to our private Facebook group designed to help you execute. Make sure you click that link now because there is an audience for you to reach. The How to Start a Successful Podcast on a Budget with No Experience, the ebook and webinar bundle presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue.
Do you really think investing in real estate is too expensive?
Well, you wrong about that.
Presenting a beginner's guide to buying your first out-of-state property, a Black Real Estate Dialogue course.
That's right, it's the new course presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue, teaching you how to develop the investor's mindset, the advantages of investing out of state, getting your finances in order, finding the right location, assembling your team, creating financing strategies, how to find and analyze properties, how to find tenants, real-life case studies, and so much more in bonus content.
Oh yeah, did we mention you have lifetime access?
My goodness! If you have dreams of buying a property out of state but have no idea where to start, well, this is the guide for you. Learn the tips from someone with firsthand experience.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. This is episode 54. Couple quick announcements before we get into this week's episode. Don't forget to leave us a rating and a comment on whichever platform you're listening to this on, and a star rating as well. It'll definitely help us move up in the rankings and reach more people. So thank you all in advance for your support. There are multiple resources available from our trusted partners in the show notes that'll help you on your journey to real estate investing, side hustles, and more. Be sure to check them out and remember that the best investment you can make is in yourself. Also, sign up for our email list. By signing up for this email list, you'll receive discounts, additional content, resources, and so much more. A couple more things before we get into this episode. I went to Dayton, Ohio last week to check on my property and do a couple other things. It was an interesting trip. I got some video clips. So I'll be putting that together and getting that up on YouTube in the next couple of weeks. But it was a great trip. Had some issues with the property management, communication wise, but I was able to get into the property, just check it out, meet my tenant. So it was a great experience. I did some drive-bys for investors and took pictures of their properties as well. Just got around the city and just explored a bit more than I did previously. So it was a great experience. Got to meet my tenant again, as I mentioned. It's interesting. Didn't expect to meet her or really talk to her, but she was great. She hasn't missed a payment. She mentioned that she was homeless prior to moving into the property. So, you know, it just felt good to be able to help her out, provide her with housing, her and her family. Property's in great condition. She's taking really good care of it. So that was very exciting. But yeah, more on that to come in the next few weeks. This episode is sponsored by the Bread Real Estate Investing Community. In this community, you'll learn about real estate from your peers daily through our group Slack channel, guest speakers several times a month, monthly team check-ins, and more. You can find the link for that in the show notes below. Also, shout out to our sponsor, Buy Back the Block LA. The mission of Buy Back the Block LA is to educate our community on the value of practicing group economics and building generational wealth. They focus on real estate as the main tool to building generational wealth and will take you from beginner to investor by educating you on the ins and outs of investing and giving you the tools you need to empower your family and your community. Every month, they hold a meetup educating the community on real estate investing, financial literacy, generational wealth, and group economics. Their new ebook, Section 8 Rentals Made Easy, is in the show notes below. To learn more, visit them on Instagram at buybacktheblockla and at buybacktheblockla.com. Very excited for this episode. You all with Andre C. Hatchett, good brother, whole lot of game. So without further ado, let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. I'm very excited about this episode. Definitely has been a long time coming. Here with me today, have the brother Andre C. Hatchett. Thanks for joining the show, man. I appreciate it.
Sam, what's up, big fan? Been an honor to be here, man. Very happy to always happy to rap with you when I can. And it's a pleasure, man, on the newest, freshest podcast out.
I appreciate it, man. Appreciate it. Shout out to you for your podcast too, man. I listened
Thank
to almost
you.
Every
Thank
episode.
You. Oh, appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, you've been pumping them out like crazy.
Yeah. I was in a zone last month. I was just like, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do like two a day some days. So yeah, appreciate it.
Definitely, man. It's crazy. Like when I started the podcast like a little over a year ago, I had a list of people I wanted to talk to, and you were on that list. So
that's an honor. Glad. Wow.
Yeah, man. Definitely.
I didn't know it was that cool.
Definitely, man. Thank you. Cool. So I guess to start off, can you just tell the people a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So hello, people. Honored to be here. Andre C. Hatchett, 38, hardcore entrepreneur, sold lemonade when I was a kid, shoveled snow, sold candy at school, had some friends of mine selling candy for us, for me at school. That was 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. I've just always been kind of that guy who just didn't want limits on my life. Went to college, was in college, out of college. I'm not the most formally educated person in the world per se, but my first career, my only career, was working with special needs children, which was very fulfilling work, but it was still a job. So I leveraged that income, which wasn't much, to buy my first couple of properties, 22, 23, and to start my mobile notary corporation, Priority Notary Inc., which is still in existence 14 plus years later. And here I am, a few online academies, a few self-published books. I'm in a long-term relationship now, which is dope. So yeah, life is good.
Definitely, man. So take us back to your childhood. Tell us what your childhood was like and, you know, what you saw, or maybe, you know, maybe what you didn't see that shaped your view of what it means to build wealth.
Yeah. So my childhood, one of the things my dad said that always stuck with me is, everyone calls me Andy in my family, that if you go to school with somebody, you don't have to work for them, right? So if me and you are in class together, I don't have to be your employee. I'm not inferior to you. I'm not below you. And that kind of set off my mindset. I said, okay, like, I don't have to take orders from everybody forever. I don't have to look at my counterparts, whether they be a different race or whatever, as I'm below them. Because inferiority complexes are real, and if you just watch the news, it can seep into your brain that you might be less than him or her sitting next to you. So I just always knew that I had boss status in me. So I just was running. So two parent household, parents separated teams, but we always lived together. We lived together growing up. Great West Indian household, older brother, younger sister in the house, and I have some siblings who were outside of my parents' marriage before they met. So great upbringing. I have nothing to complain about. Parents worked full-time gigs, but they always encouraged us to pursue more. Not dumping on 9-to-5 work, but we always talked about home ownership and just getting the thing done. So yeah. I owe a lot to my siblings and my parents.
Definitely, man. So it's interesting. It seems like from a young age, like home ownership and just thinking about more, what more you could do was a really big thing. How do you feel that influenced you, you know, when it came time to buy your first property?
Yeah, with everything. It was everything. I remember reading Rich Dad Poor Dad during the summer. I also coach youth basketball as well, second to fifth graders. And I remember just reading Rich Dad Poor Dad. It seemed like all summer I walked around with that book. and I just was, you know, the thing about, so here's the thing about having a job, which can be good if you're entrepreneurial. You could be so ticked off from the job that you put so much effort into your entrepreneurial ventures. Like, oh, I got to take orders. Or she was talking down to me and I can't even vocally defend myself or stick up myself because I don't want to be the angry black guy at work. You could be so ticked off from your job that you put so much emphasis onto saving your money and investing into yourself that you just become a machine. And that's kind of what happened to me. That's really what happened. So at 2019, 2020, I was writing down every dollar I earned and spent for like 3 years, fam. Like, wow. Up until I was able, because I didn't have enough money to go out and spend and to save for the crib. So I had a car died. I was on the bus. Well, I was on the bus, 21 years old, 710 bands in the bank, 740 or so FICO score. Like, that was real because I could have went out and financed most cars, which most people would have done, and I wouldn't blame them.
Yeah.
So I was all in. I was all in on saving, keeping the FICO high, monitoring what I made and spent. And at 22, I was able to make it happen, man.
Man, that's a lot of sacrifice.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough at any age, but I think it's tougher when you're younger because, you know, you want to go out. Your friends all have cars, probably. You want to impress women. You want to be able to pick them up. But I just knew that something that my dad instilled in me. He said, once you have a house, as long as you make the payments on it, you own it forever. I was like, oh, shoot. So like 2 years isn't that bad of sacrificing of a house that I own forever. So, yeah.
Definitely. So walk us through that process. What was that process like? Just, you know, once you had enough money and I was able to kind of go forth with the process and buy something.
Yeah, so I was trying to get a multifamily, but I couldn't do it on my own, which we'll talk about. Your own, do it something your own later. I couldn't do my own, so I got what they call in New York, as you know, a co-op, right? So if you're out of New York, it's similar to a condo. So I was shopping, I was out, and one day I saw this in the newspaper. This one went, damn, am I that old? Shoot. I was looking at the newspaper, which I know everything's online now, but I found a lot of deals in newspapers, per se. So I was looking at the newspaper, and there was no board approval. So for some condos and co-ops, you have to go through a board and they have to approve you. Have to like your financial and your life portfolio for them to let you in, even though you have the down payment and the mortgage commitment, all that stuff. This was no board. So I was like, oh, okay. And I went on a Friday with my aunt and she said, Andy, if you don't get this, I'm going to get this for my daughter, which is my cousin. I was like, all right. My payments were under $600 a month. That was mortgage, maintenance, and parking. I knew that I could rent it out for $900 or plus dollars a month on the rental market. So that would be $300 a month in profit once I'm ready to move on from it. And it just made sense. Parking, moving ready, close to the buses and trains in downtown Yonkers. I handed in the offer. I think it was just about asking price. I met a counter, and then we came up to asking price right below it. And I just got the offer in, and I got it done. Be careful with the ego and the asking price thing. I know people tell you always buy under below market value. Be careful with that, right? Fighting so hard to prove a point to the seller for $500, $1,000, or $2,000. If you look at your mortgage payments, that might be $25 or $50 that you have to pay more, and the deal might still be great. So be careful with the ego when it comes to making an offer. Sometimes it's a good deal and you just got to hop on it.
Definitely. So what was, how did it feel once you finished, you know, you moved in and you know, what was that like? And you were what, 22 years old?
I was 22. Yeah. I think I had a party, meaning like 3, 5, 6 friends over. It seemed like for a month. I was showing everybody, oh, people want to see it because I was talking so much about real estate. I think people thought it was crazy because I didn't have a degree and I didn't have a high paying career. So I think some people definitely thought I was crazy. And once I did it, they were like, oh, shoot, like you did it. like you did it. And I became the expert in my friends and extended friends circle. People asking me, well, what was that? How did you do this? What did you save the money? And I told them, look, I just didn't have a life. You didn't see me going out for a while because I had to save this money. So it felt, I had a very high sense of personal fulfillment. Mm-hmm. We buy property for, all the time they say, like, don't be emotional with buying assets or property. It was emotional, fam. It was emotional. I grew up in an apartment. This one thing just changed my, and I heard you say this before, it changed my family trajectory for years to come. And here's the other dope thing about it is one of my family members actually lives in the property now. So wow. it literally changed my family trajectory for me for the foreseeable future. So it was a high, man. It was a high, and the high's still there because I'm here smiling when I think about it.
Cheesy, man.
Yeah, it was dope.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And something you mentioned that I want to make sure we highlight is you didn't have like this lucrative career. And a lot of times in our
career,
we won't even look. We just automatically assume if I'm not making a lot of money and I live in this city, that city, it's completely impossible. And we just shut off completely. Mm-hmm. But clearly that's not always the case. You know, there's always ways around it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the thing is, it's ideal if you do make a lot of money. It's easier mm-hmm. to get financing. It's easier for the bank to take you more seriously. It's easier to save for the down payment. Totally get it. But you would be surprised. So I was a teacher's aide assistant. So like hourly, 18, 19, 20, salary-wise, 30, if I do some overtime, maybe pushing it 40 if I work summers. Not a ton of money, especially being in New York. But if you don't have a lot of debt, you can maneuver some things, right? So I don't tell myself no in my head before I get out there and experience it. And I can remember even going to closing. Some of my colleagues, I could tell that they were like, how the hell did he do this? They were like, the question they were asking was like, so you got a mortgage? And it was just kind of crazy. Like, yeah, I did it. I'm going to closing. I'll see you guys. It was on a Friday. I was like, all right, I'll see you guys Monday. And it was... that's funny. So it was, don't tell yourself no in your head. Let the banker tell you no. Let the mortgage broker tell you no. Let three or four tell you no. And no, in the business world, Sam, it's not final. It's no, not now. It's raise your score 20 points. Let these collections fall off. Dispute this. Save an extra $5,000 for the down payment. Get the seller to pay an extra $2,000. No's aren't final in the real estate and business world. It's just not now. I mean, I've been through Chapter 7 before, and I also got financing on a property last year. So I'm a real live example of shortcomings and things going wrong aren't final. I mean, you just got to tell yourself yes.
For sure, for sure. Did you use like any certain like down payment assistance programs or loan programs?
No, it was conventional mortgage. I was trying to get a grant, but the paperwork was too, I had applied late and the paperwork for me would have taken too long. So I was just like, skip it. I knew it was a good deal. So I just hopped on it, but they are out there. I just didn't get one for mine.
Got you. So you got your first property. How, you know, if I guess from that point on, the years after, like how did things grow from there?
Yeah, so I rocked out the job for a few more years. So I was 22 then. Me and my aunt got a property together in Georgia, a townhouse, brand new construction townhouse. So that was 23, we got that townhouse. So that was dope as well. Then I got into some bad real estate deals. I got scammed on some real estate deals. I probably had a good amount of money saved, probably like 15, 20 bands, which was a lot for me at the time. Credit score was great, lost that. I got scammed on like three properties from a close person, family member, older kind of advisor, that they were in some crooked stuff. I was too, this is where I was wrong. I was too, success is great, right? Being an overachiever is great, but sometimes we can become blinded because we are just so zealous and on it that we ignore red flags per se. So I kept the property with my aunt and my primary home, thank God. And I lost those other investment properties that I got through their little group because my mortgage payments couldn't, my mortgage payments were higher than my rent payments and not even close. And the appraisers and the bankers, they were just had some big racket going on. Sorry. And I lost a lot. And I got ticked off at myself, at him, at real estate in general. So a couple of years were just kind of crappy, yeah. But crappy in terms of real estate, but not in terms of business, because I still had my other notary business going on. Right. So extra streams or extra systems of income is good. It's great. Not just financially, it's good to get your mind off of what's not working.
Yeah.
And you can find something else to focus on.
Definitely. Definitely, man. And I appreciate you sharing about that. A lot of times, like we, you know, life or what people see is kind of like a highlight reel, but I appreciate you mentioning you know, some of the things that went wrong. So I guess in hindsight, what do you feel, you know, in those situations where it just didn't work out, what are some red flags you think you maybe ignored? And what are some things just looking back that you realize as well?
So I'm hardcore on accountability, right? So get a second opinion from someone who's not involved in your deal, who also wants you to win. So if I have a deal come up and I might be looking at it, it might be a for sale by owner or whatever, right? I might say, okay, this looks good to me, but let me pay Sam his fee to come give his second opinion. Why Sam? Because Sam wants me to win. Sam owns property. Sam interviews real estate investors every friggin' week. Sam can spot out some good or some bad stuff, right? So have a third party who's not involved in the transaction. You pay them for a second or third opinion. It can't hurt to have. So things like that would have helped prevented me. If somebody is overzealous, calling you constantly, messaging you constantly, they could be desperate. They might be on drugs. Just get a feel for it. Just get a feel for it. And listen to yourself. Listen to yourself. Things might go off internally that say, okay, I don't know what it is, but this isn't really lining up with what I feel is right. So those things would help prevented me from that mess of a few years. And one house a year for 10 years is 10 houses that you own forever, as long as you make the payments on it. Some people are a house a month, a house a week, 200 houses a year, and that's their thing and they're rolling. Some people need to maybe start off a little slower, and it might feel like you're losing, especially in the social media age, but a house a year is a house a year. A house every 6 months is a house every 6 months. You have to follow your timetable. Your timetable might not be his on IG or hers on Facebook. You might have a different timetable and be okay with that if it's working for you. You have time to speed up. It might not be early on.
Definitely. And I like that you mentioned that it's very easy to get, what do they call it? Like shiny object syndrome? Like, you know, you
see
all
that.
Somebody else FOMO. Doing something and mm-hmm. yeah, FOMO and all that. You know, I agree with you. I think it's very easy just, you know, looking on it, social media, listening to all these podcasts, you see like, you know, what people are doing. And it's very, very easy to just feel like you are not doing enough. But I like that you mentioned like one house a year, you know, imagine you just keep doing that for the next 10, 20 years or so, like when you're old, you're winning, your family's winning. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a big thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So something else that you mentioned as well, and I've heard you say before, sometimes like something to the effect of you have to slow down to speed up.
Yeah.
Can you talk more about that as well?
Yeah. So going fast sounds great. I'm going so super fast. Team, no sleep. Sink or swim. Get out of my way. I don't want to hear it. I'm going for the gusto. These things sound great. They sound ambitious, alpha even per se. For me personally, I was doing too many self-employed ventures at one time, and I was just starting a bunch of stuff, and I wasn't finishing a bunch of stuff. So And being busy also sounds and feels great because you're busy, but how productive are you? So I was like, okay, I'm doing well, but I'm not as organized as I need to be, not even close, borderline messy per se. And I just, it wasn't a manly feeling. It just was like, not like this isn't it. So I literally had to slow my brain down, which is tough. I had to slow my brain down first. Then I had to slow my ventures down, how many things I started up down. Everything kind of just took like a, and it was hard. It was really hard because I just had this energy to go. But once I did that, I became more organized. I hired better people. I became more thorough. I became more thorough and diligent with what I have on my plate currently. And I grew what I got in the habit of growing what I currently have before I start new ventures. Oftentimes, we follow that seven stream methodology, and we feel, okay, like I just started an online e-commerce business. I literally just started. Now I'm going to start an accounting business. Like, you just started. You just got the paperwork done. And now I'm going to start right away. So I had to literally slow down. And that's what got me to six figures consistently was that slowing down process, being more diligent on what I have going on. And it got me to six figures.
100%. And something else that I want to talk about as well, you know, a lot of times in our community, we feel like we need to do everything on our own. You know, we don't want to work with anybody. You know, you already mentioned working with, you know, your family member to get the house in Atlanta. But I know you've had a number of other partnerships via real estate as well. So can you talk about why you decided to go that route?
Yeah. It's not always easy to come up with 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 grand on your own. I know everyone's rich nowadays because of Instagram, right? Everyone's so rich. Everyone ain't that rich. Let's get that out of the way. I just wasn't going as far as I wanted to go, and I didn't want to do all the work anymore. So I just was like, okay, what can I do? Who can I work with to scale and for me not have to do all the work anymore? And be careful about the wanting to do all the work yourself thing. I know a lot of people take pride in it. I run everything. My life right now is minimal, me running everything. I run a couple of things now. Other people run my life more than I do, and it feels great, actually. So hooked up with some people, Charles and the crew, Todd, what up, Mills, Charles Ogilvy, and he was forming his group, his organization, and Money Madu, Black Seed Capital with the stock. So it was Money Madu with the stocks, which we closed it out because the platform we were using, they were closing, and we cashed out over 40%. Wow. I threw money in weekly, bi-weekly and monthly, depending on how much I had going on in my other life, in my personal life financially. And at the end of, it was about 2 years, I was up 40%. So that 40% wouldn't have happened if I wasn't down with the group joint ventures. Now with the real estate, I think I'm in on seven properties or so. And I might own literally 5% of some, 5.12%, 3.5% of that, maybe 10% of that. But I'm fine with that. Yeah. I'm fine with that. We own a bunch of vending machines as well. A minority partner and all that stuff. Totally fine with that. But I'm able to say that I have seven or eight investment properties in Detroit. And 10, 20 vending machines in California because I invested a small amount of money. And it might be 500 to 2,000. I don't even think it was 2,000 on one particular, maybe 1,000. Mm-hmm. And owning a fraction of a bunch of stuff is owning a fraction of a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Just need to have 100% ownership of everything you do. Now, look, if you could swing it, knock it out. But I couldn't. Can I now? Probably getting closer there, but I couldn't. And I don't want to. So for me, owning minority stake in a bunch of assets is a minority stake in a bunch of assets. Let's say that it's eight properties and I'm getting, even like a small kick, $25 to $75 per property. Let's say $75 per vending machine a week or or per the vending machine group a week. If you look at it, that might be $700-$800 in month and passive income, plus the equity that's building up from the properties, plus we're still getting more, plus my own stuff. Yeah, like that's a win where I come from, man. Like that's a pretty solid victory.
Definitely, man. Definitely. So I definitely want to make sure we spend some time on all your other ventures you have going on, especially the mobile notary game, something we don't really know about. But first, could you talk more about the Black Real Estate School? I think it's an excellent thing I've been following. I know there's like a whole lot, there's like a longer program going on right now. But can you talk more about, you know, starting that and how that's grown as well?
Yeah, so in 2015, I started my first online academy, which was the Notary Business School. And I realized, I got a lot of positive feedback that I'm a good teacher. I'm able to take complex things that might seem complex for most people and break them down into simplistic terminology and give people a level of accountability and follow through that they might not receive in a bunch of places. So I'm like, okay, I know mobile notary, I also know real estate. So 2016, notice the time difference. It wasn't right at the same month that I started one, that I started the other. So 2016, I'm like, okay, I'm going to start a real estate online academy. So did that. I know some stuff, but I gathered other people who just knew more than I knew. So I teach maybe the 101 or 102 section, and I get Scotty Smith to teach the 202 real estate development, Ponzi Barnes, maybe the 300, how to buy properties in Chicago with little to no debt. So become like a community of a bunch of dope Black real estate investors. I think most of us younger, I think most of us are under 45 or so, who have our own individual knowledge and expertise, and we just give dope content. So yeah, that was 2016, and we have a program now that's called How to Build a Successful Real Estate Portfolio in 2021 and Beyond. And people are digging it, man. People are digging Mobile Home Elite. Dope people, man. Dope brothers and sisters from all over the country, which is another great aspect of it. It's not just, I live in Atlanta now and I was in New York. So no, we have people from literally all over the country, California, Texas, Illinois, DMV, Florida. So you can get accurate information on your region and or where you want to invest. And Elisa, what up, Annalisa? She's out there in the Midwest where you own property as well. So it's a bunch of game for a very, very fair price. And honestly speaking, I'm watching these sessions, these replays. I'm like, man, this is rich.
Definitely, man. Definitely, definitely. That's awesome. Definitely make sure you all tap in. That will certainly have that in the show notes. So love to talk, you know, you invest in real estate, but you also have a thriving business in the mobile notary space. Can you talk more about, you know, how you got into that? You know, it's not something, as I'm sure you've seen, that's very, that we think about as a great source of income, but obviously it is. So can you talk more about that?
Yeah. So the mobile notary industry. Okay. So we talked earlier about my 22, 23 year old ventures in real estate. Along with that, 23 was also the mobile notary business. So I was hanging out with some friends, and we have a mutual friend named Ricky. What up, Ricky? Salmon of Good to Go Notary. And they were saying that he shows up somewhere, he makes $75 or so, and he's there for like 5 minutes or 15, 20 minutes, like $75. And remember, for me, I was making $100 a day at the job, like literally $100 a day. At 15 or so an hour, 18 an hour, $100 a day. Oh, and I was there all day, 8:30 or 8 o'clock till 3:30. I was like, okay, that's better than what I'm doing. So I actually put me in contact with Ricky. I shadowed him for a day and I saw him. I believe it was like 3 appointments. We were in Westchester County, we were in New York. So we were in Westchester County, then we went down to the city. And I just saw this man, be his own boss and make bread. And every appointment, he was there 20 minutes or less. I was like, oh shoot, this is it. It was simple. You didn't need a fancy degree to get it done. And I could, two jobs, I could make double what I make all day working at the 9-to-5. So I got my license. I failed the first notary test. I'm not an academician per se. I'm not the best test taker in the world, but failed the first test, studied, took a class for the test, got my passed the second time. And 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks after that, I was able to get my notary commission. I got my stamp. And the day I got my stamp, I did an appointment. I believe Ricky put me on with the client, and I made $45 or $47, and I was there for 15 minutes. And I was like, this is like heaven. This is like entrepreneurial heaven to me, because it just worked my personality. Something you probably also heard me say, Sam, is I don't need to love everything I do per se. I don't need to be passionate about everything I do per se, like overly passionate about it. I need to be able to get out of a job. I need to be able to have a 9-to-5. And that got me out of the 9-to-5 world. And I also knew that I could subcontract out other people to work for me. So when I was at the job, I was charging $200 for a loan closing per se. And I had other people doing it for $100, $125, $75. So let's say that I do 5 jobs a day or even a week at $200. My company contracts out 5 assignments for $200. I pay someone else $100 to do those assignments. I make $500 from just being the middleman per se. So I knew that there was scalability, that I don't have to do all the jobs myself, and that I can make $75 to $200+ per appointment that I do myself. So it made sense, it worked, and here we are 14+ years later, my phone still rings all the time. So yeah, fantastic, simple. I don't use the word easy because it can be misleading, but simple to start business that won't cost you a bunch of money. So it's been working for me, man.
Definitely. So early on, were you kind of just doing it yourself, and then eventually you started to like subcontract?
Yeah. So it was so much work at the time. I had to subcontract soon.
Wow.
Sooner than I thought I would. Yeah. And being at the gig from 8 to 3, I was. They had complained about me because I was always on my phone, and I was like, man, I got to go. Like, I just quit. I just gave my notice out of the search. I was like, I got to get these calls in. Y'all ain't paying me.
Yeah.
So I gave my notice, and like, sure. I was like, yeah, I'll see you guys later. And I handed in my notice, and I moved on. So, yeah, the phone was ringing because we were doing a lot of loan closings. So industry term, I might be like a signing agent per se. So I was getting all these calls, and I just couldn't handle them all. So I had to divvy them out. I structured my middleman on my signing service a couple of years later, just because I became more familiar with it. And at first, I was knocking them out myself. Evenings, weekends, I was making like $6,000 to $8,000 a month when things were cooking out, like 24. 25, wow. 26. So that whole degree thing, I don't knock degrees. I think degrees are great for some people, but I was making degree money in my 20s without a degree. And had my own company doing it. So yeah, but that was the mobile notary start.
Man, that's powerful, man. And something you mentioned is that, you know, you got to a point where, you know, you realized the job was kind of holding you back from being able to take all the work that you wanted to take. So can you talk through more about like what was going through your mind at that moment? Were you kind of ready? Were you a little bit nervous? Like what was that moment like?
I never wanted to have a job. So I had jobs. I had jobs. I was 14 years old. Mm-hmm. Worked at several ice creams, 2 Baskin Robbins, 1 Haagen-Dazs, did internships at hospitals over the summertime. Medical centers. I was a cabana boy. I washed dishes. I worked at Harman's Discount World, which is like a CVS. There are more jobs I had to, but I worked jobs. I worked at nursing homes. I worked in high school, and I had 2 jobs most of the time while I was in high school. Sometimes 3. So I work. Even though I don't like jobs, I work. I just like have money more than I like the opposite. So I never wanted the job. Even when I was a teenager. Now, we're going back, I'm 38, so we're going back 14 or so years. For us and our race, it wasn't as popular to be an entrepreneur even 14 years ago. This is like the past 5-6 years. And I'm going to brag a little bit. I think guys like me kind of set the trend, to be honest with you, with being Black and entrepreneurial. And not, of course, not just me, Voice, Black, and a bunch of other great people. Like, we kind of set the trend to, like, think outside of the entrepreneurial box for males and black males. So as soon as I got the daylight, Sam, I was out. I just needed daylight. I needed a few more because I did have a mortgage payment, so I couldn't take and I had to be strategic about it, but I had a retirement account, pension from the school system. I had a few $1,000 on my own, and I had enough daylight, and I was gone. So I handed in my notice, and I was out. Now, the economy tanked, and I had to go back to work because business slowed up. At the time, I was focusing on just loan flow, or mostly loan flow things. I wasn't really marketing for fingerprinting and fast deals, power of attorneys, and all the other very, very lucrative options. So once banks stopped lending, deciding to get part of the business slowed up, so I went back to work. Luckily, I was a good employee, even though I didn't like jobs per se, and I was able to get back. I was able to get hired back actually the same day, and I started back for about another 7 months, and then business started jumping again, and that's when I quit again, and I gave my notice, and I was out, and I haven't had a job since. So it's been 11 years or so that I've been job free. Was I nervous? Certain people take orders better than other people. And that's not a knock on anyone who's okay with it. Oh, and or if you need it, you leave. If you want to leave when it's your time.
Yeah.
It's just never really sat right with me. I did get pushback from some people. They told me that this is a good job. This is a good job. You have a good job, Andre. I mean, how good is a job? Is it really that good? I would have tops after 20 years. Let's just say that I didn't become a teacher, and I would have been an aide and assistant the whole time. 20 years, I would have made 60, 70 grand. After 20 years, and you think that I need to stay there for 20 years? So people will tell you stuff all the time. People will tell you what they think about you and what they think about themselves all the time. I just knew that I could make more than that. So I had to go through some pushback from some people who didn't get it. I had a stack full of paychecks from my notary business and PayPal receipts that showed that proved I could make more money than y'all paid me, than they paid me. So
yeah,
it was an interesting time.
Definitely, man. And you know, you mentioned something as well that, you know, once the signing agent side of the business slowed down, you expanded into other types of notary business. Can you talk about those?
Mm-hmm. So becoming a signing agent for my loan holdings is the most popular part of the business per se. Mm-hmm. So I should figure out how it got there, but it is. Or my most professional part, whatever. And it pays good. On average for loan closing, it can make 100 to like 300 per loan closing. On average, let's say 175 for an hour's worth of work, which is cool. But if the bank stopped lending per se, then that side takes a hit. So I and Ricky and my friend Mike, we're like, okay, what else is out there besides the service that we saw? Fingerprinting for people who need fingerprints. There might be accountants, nurses, people getting their gun license, their nursing license, their doctor's license. A bunch of people need to get fingerprinted all the time. People who are flying out the country for certain reasons need to get fingerprinted. That's a service. People need wills, power of attorney, living trusts, healthcare proxies. They call those estate documents notarized at their home or at their office all the time. Apostilles. When you're legalizing a document for a foreign country, those need to get processed all the time. So I say, okay, there are more options than just doing loan closings. So we dived into marketing for those things. And I was, oh, shoot, there's so much money to make in this industry with this stamp. If you have the knowledge, it's absurd. It's freaking absurd. So yeah. Multiple streams isn't given enough detail. I look like a tree, like a tree. So we have the mobile notary tree, and there's like branches. So there's loan closings, bingo. There's fingerprinting, bingo. There's apostilles, bingo. There's wills, power of attorneys, affidavits, and a bunch of other stuff that comes off of that tree. So within that tree, I've been able to sustain myself well for a very long time.
Definitely, man. It's definitely something people need to look into. And, you know, of course, you know, you have, can you talk more about your courses you have around the notary business and the, yeah. I mean, obviously you've had testimonials and great results from a lot of your students. Yeah. Can you talk to us more about that?
Yeah, it's pretty cool, man. We had our 5-year anniversary virtually last month or so. I think it was October. So yeah, it was dope. So 5 years of teaching on the notary business online. We've had great results. We have fantastic results. A lot of people have been able to leave their full-time gig and do this full-time. Some people do it part-time. Excuse me, I have some people who make $12,000 a month consistently.
Wow.
And they're in their 20s, 12 grand a month. It's been wonderful. It's been wonderful. So yeah, we put together programs which teach you exactly what we do. It's me, some friends, and actually some former students come teach now. And we have the entry level programs, which just gets you started, gets your phone ringing, teach you how to be self-employed. And then we have the middleman, a middlewoman option, which shows you how to get the calls, lock down the client, have somebody do the job for you, and then you take the cut. Yeah. Right? So any way you slice it, you can win. We have the Fingerprinting Academy, which shows you how to become a fingerprint technician and take prints, charge, and lock down clients for that. I actually have some students lock down some clients, and they gave them contracts. So like they're like their go-to fingerprint people. Wow. In their region. So yeah, it's something I'm very proud of. We take a lot of pride in it. We've helped thousands, probably 10,000-11,000 people over the past 5 years, and the results are out there. So if you're thinking about it, Sam will have the links. If you're looking for a part-time thing, so I changed around one of the terminologies for our program. It was called the all-inclusive package. Now I call it the 2 through 12K club, right? The plan is for everyone who takes it seriously, who wants to make an extra 2 through 12K a month. That's our top tier package. And our goal, our plan is to make sure you get there with the knowledge and enough support, because those are some real tangible numbers. So at 2K a month, that's like, $500 a week, which for a lot of people, that's all they need to change around their lives. Then we have other people who might be more into it, who might want to go hardcore at it. And our goal is to get you to 12K or more a month. So, and then when you slice it, we are here for you.
Definitely, man. Love it. Love it. So what advice would you give to somebody, you know, who's, I guess it's a two-part question, who's interested in, you know, becoming a mobile notary, making some side income, you know, potentially doing it full time. And secondly, someone who is interested in real estate, maybe they don't have enough on their own, but they're considering partnering, but they're a bit hesitant.
Yeah. If you're looking to make some good side income, hit the link in Sam's show notes, enroll, 60-day money back guarantee. The good thing about me is I'm not overly complicated, so I don't use a lot of big fancy words. So I teach how I talk, which is simple, kind of step by step. So if you listen and follow a step, you'll get it. And if you don't get it, we'll give you money back. We won't even ask you any questions. Like, okay, cool. Hit the refund button. You got it back. Even if you don't need the money now, some people are like, well, I don't need the money. You don't want to wait till you need the money in order to learn a new skill. You want to learn a new tangible needed skill before you need the money. If you do need it, then you need to hit that link like now and enroll and increase your net worth, increase your skill base. Just do it. If you don't know what to do, and you are entrepreneurial, enroll with us. Like, learn what we got. Go on to do something you might be more passionate about later on after you have some money coming in. So it's a whole lot easier to pursue passion projects once you have some consistent money coming in. Let's just be real about that. If you want to learn, if you want to get into real estate, my motto is get in. You probably won't. A goal of a lot of ours, right, is to work with our childhood friends and family members. Sometimes that works out. I've got more done with strangers than I have with people I've known for a long time. I think that's probably you as well, Sam, and a lot of other people who we both know in our community. Get in where you fit in. Meet new people. You don't need to start a whole movement to build Black Wall Street tomorrow. If you do, that's great. I do some of my best work with maybe like 3 to 5 people, 3 to 10 people on an assignment, a property, adventure. That's just kind of how I move, and I've been able to get a lot done. But guess what? Training to figure out what system and what strategy works best for you. Sam has the out-of-state program. We have our program. There's no lack of information anymore. It just might cost you, I mean, $50 to $200, which is still a deal, to figure out which system works for you. But get some property. You need to own some property, whether it be out-of-state, in-state, primary residence, investment property, Airbnb. You need to have some property coming in, because 10 years from now, most people who don't own property will say they wish they did. Most people who own property will say they're glad they bought it. Real simple 101. 10 years from now, will you be happier that you own two or three homes or 10 homes, or will you be sadder? 90% of people are happy with it, even if they have a bad tenant, even if they have a crappy Airbnb review, which they didn't deserve. Think long term, you'll probably be better off, and you don't have to do it alone anymore. And if you can't find a group to work with, start a group. Start your own group and be some cool strangers and build it and go from there. And that's my advice, man. Start. You get better later. You get better as you go along, and your older self will be happier. I mean, for me at 38, I'm not even thinking about necessarily 40%. I'm thinking more about 45 or 50. I'll be loaded. I'll be lit.
Definitely, man. Definitely. Something else, I don't think I'm brought this up yet. Something that you're big on, and I relate to a lot of people, is overact and underthink.
Yeah.
A lot of people just overthink stuff, and you just don't end up doing anything. So can you talk more about that as well?
They overthink and they don't act. They do the opposite. I do the opposite. I overact and underthink. So it's a slightness, right? If you do more and think less, you'll get more done. If you think a lot, you probably won't get anything done because you're thinking so much. Because you want things to be perfect in your head before you get in the ballgame. You want things to be perfectly laid out before you get started, and that hardly ever happens. It hardly ever happens like that. You tend to get better as you go along. But think about entrepreneurship. Now it's become easier with people. But even with the roadmap, you have your own variation of it because you won't do exactly 100% what we tell you to do, probably, which is fine. But you need to take action in order to get better. Thinking about action will get you I've got a semi-plan. But the best plans will come from you taking action. You're going to start. You're going to learn. Start, get better, learn more, start, get better. And you're going to go so much further. I can't stand with living in my head. Now I'm in a relationship, a very happy relationship, but I can't, even with her. Like, I saw her, met online, she's all right. She's wonderful. She's a wonderful looking lady. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go for it. And things worked out. Right? What if I didn't? I would have been there like, damn. I would have been thinking about it. I would have been discouraged. I would have been struggling. I was like, damn, what if I just would have did it? Same approach I take with dating. Same approach with business. I'm happier going for it than I am just thinking about it. So that's how I live. And yeah, it has its cons because everyone won't want to date you. Every business venture won't work out. But I'm at peace living with knowing that I went for it. I don't need to figure out if she likes me before I ask her out. I'll find out when I ask her out. I don't need to think about, is this stream going to work? I'll figure it out after a few weeks, after a couple months after I start. And I'm okay with living like that. It works for me.
Definitely, man. Definitely. Man, this has been a powerful interview. Just been great. Just learning about, you know, your journey in real estate and in business and just where things have grown from now, and just shows the power of consistency and just growing bit by bit. So is there anything else you want to share with the people, and also like where they can reach you and access everything?
Yeah. If you want to access everything that I have for sale, click the show notes for that. If you want to follow me on Instagram, Andre Hatchett, LinkedIn. Might be Andre C. Hatchett on LinkedIn. I just give some information. So I'm not young, but I'm not old. I'm pretty seasoned, I guess you might say. Not extremely, it took me years to even almost, I walked the commencement for graduation from college, like years, like 12, 14 years of starting, stopping. In school, I didn't talk about this, but they were me as having a learning disability in school. Mm-hmm. Because I have a speech impediment. So I thought I was inferior, right? Mm-hmm. Academically inferior anyway. But at 22, I owned the house. Most of my teachers probably didn't. 23, oh no, so my teachers probably didn't. And here I am in the top 7% of all income earners in the world. Wow. Like legit, I'm on top 7% or so of all income earners in the world. So you got to start. You got to start. Master something before you move on to the next thing. Go all in on what's paying you. And it's easier to figure out what you want to do after you have some income coming in, especially if you're a dude. I'm not a fan of men out here being broke trying to pursue passion per se. I think you should have an asset or two while you work along with your passion projects. But get some money coming in, man. Get some friggin' money coming in. It makes life better. So, and start, and give Sam 5-star review on Apple.
Appreciate that, man. Oh, and your podcast as well.
My podcast, yeah. The Hackiest Way Podcast. It is me and sometimes some friends, and Alisa is a recurring guest. And Alisa, what up? Recurring guest on there talking. It's a lot about personal development. If I have to find what it is, a lot about personal development, things that I've been through. I talk about highs and lows as through entrepreneurship and just figuring out life. We talk a lot about relationships, marriage, how to maintain those things. I have my man Mike Dorsey, Lex Kelly's a regular on there. Got to get you on there, Brad. So it's dope. I'm digging it. It's a lot of fun, and we just talk some good game. It's on YouTube, on my YouTube channel, Andre Hatchett, and on Apple. If you can give me a 5-star review as well, I would appreciate that. And we're digging it.
Definitely, man. Definitely. A whole lot of good things going on. But yeah, man, I appreciate you jumping on the show. Definitely was a pleasure. And, you know, we'll definitely be in touch.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it, man. You're the man.
Definitely. Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. I look forward to hearing from you all soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast. That's B-R-E-D Podcast. Until next time.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.